Florida's governor issue a statewide lockdown. Good morning. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this hour, infectious disease experts warn the window is closing to protect Florida from further spread of the disease. Then later in the hour, how a simple morning meditation can help calm you down in these stressful times. That's later. But first, here's the latest on coronavirus in our area. There are now 91 confirmed cases in Northeast Florida and 1,467 across the state. The numbers have jumped overnight. St. Johns County yesterday reported its first death from the virus, bringing the total local deaths in our area to six. Duval County is now leading the state as well among cases at long-term facilities. Epidemiologists say Florida has just 1 week, maybe even less, to contain the spread of the virus and that drastic steps are needed. Dr. Mobeen Rathore is a pediatric infectious disease specialist for Baptist Health, and he's on the line. Dr. Rathore, thanks for being with us. Okay, I can't hear Dr. Rathore, and that is because we are doing this a little differently today. We are doing this broadcast remotely. I am at home, and so as our engineers work to get the connection set so that I can hear Dr. Rathore and ask him questions, I'm going to ask everyone to bear with us and also to send us your questions on Twitter and on Facebook and on email. We cannot take phone calls today. Dr. Rathore, can you chat with me again so I can make sure that I can hear you? Hi, Dr. Rathore.
Hey, Melissa, thank you. I can hear you loud and clear.
Great, I can hear you too. Now, let me ask you, a recent statistical model shows that Florida may have only 1 week to contain the virus before our hospitals might become overwhelmed, as we've seen happen in other countries. What's your reaction to that, and do you agree or not?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think we have a very narrow window of opportunity here where we need to take all the necessary actions to protect our citizens. I know these are tough decisions, and but all evidence is pointing if we do not do something right now, stay at home, shelter at home orders have to be given. Otherwise, this is going to affect our community in a very terrible way. And the healthcare system, all the projections are that the healthcare system is going to be overwhelmed unless we take drastic actions right now. The window is closing very fast.
Right. We don't have an overload of patients yet, but that is expected to change. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry has, by executive order, told everyone to work from home if they can. I am working from home today, as are most of my coworkers. I'm broadcasting from my house. Should the state lock down? We're seeing major cities around Florida essentially issue lockdown orders, but as yet the governor, Ron DeSantis, has hesitated to do that. Is that, in your view, a mistake given our large senior population and the fact that Florida might become the next epicenter of this crisis?
The predictions are that Florida and maybe Texas will be the next epicenters. We will probably go the same way New York has gone and New Jersey has gone. And I think it is critical that this effort be statewide. Yes, that the mayors can do some local decisions as has been done in South Florida. But I think this is an epidemic that's going to impact the whole state. If we cannot do this in pick and choose and do some areas, and not. We need to pay attention to the whole state, and we need to make sure while we and the healthcare industry are working towards making sure that we are prepared for the pandemic, it is to be clear to everyone that the resources are going to be overwhelmed unless we take actions, and we need to take action right now.
We've seen in other countries, Italy, Spain, hospitals, ICUs have become overwhelmed. Doctors have to make horrific decisions about who lives and who dies when the system gets swamped. And often elderly patients are not given the life-saving ventilator or respirator younger patients are, because they have to go to a sort of triage mode and make these terrible decisions. Can you share with me, at Baptist Health, how equipped are you to handle patients, and how are you working with other hospitals to plan ahead for this?
Baptist Health, as you know, is just one of several healthcare systems in the city in Northeast Florida, and I know our leadership is working with other healthcare systems to have a coherent citywide plan how we have to deal with this. No one health system in this city will be able to handle this situation by themselves. All of them will have to work together. Difficult decisions will have to be made, as you have heard. Difficult decisions have been made in Europe, and we will be forced with those ethical dilemmas, how we are going to triage, who is going to be able to get. We hope that we take enough actions, and that's why I'm saying it's so important to have those strict measures. We hope that we take enough actions that those, as you've heard many times before, that curve is flattened, and that we may still have the same number of people who may get seriously ill, but it will be over a long period of time, which would mean that we will be able to handle those seriously ill. We'll be able to have enough ICU beds, enough hospital beds, enough ventilators. If we can just flatten this curve and have this, just think about it, and I'm just using numbers, these are not accurate numbers. If we have 10,000 cases in 1 week, 1 month, as opposed to having 10,000 cases over 5, 6, 7, 8 months. So I think that makes a huge difference, and that is why I think many people are saying that we need to take the strong actions which will make sure that our population is protected from the spread. The spread probably will happen if we can slow it down. If fewer people are infected, fewer people are going to be hospitalized, fewer people are going to be in the ICUs, and fewer people are going to need respirators. This is something that is very critical.
What's your reaction then to President Trump saying he wants to open the country back up by Easter and end social distancing and working from home and Americans staying home and not going into businesses?
I think we have to focus as healthcare professionals, as physicians, we have to focus on what we know, how to best deal with this pandemic. We need to focus on what is the best evidence available to us and what it is telling us. And I think the healthcare, national healthcare leadership has been very clear that this is going to be, as somebody said, a marathon, not a sprint, and that we have to be prepared for the long haul. I mean, I think we will know more and more about which direction this pandemic is going in the next few weeks. All indications are that it's going the way of, unfortunately, way of Italy and not way of South Korea.
We're speaking with Dr. Mobeen Rathore of Baptist Health as we transition to a remote broadcast. I'm broadcasting today from my house, so we can't take your phone calls. As millions of Americans work from home, so are we at WJCT. We will go to your tweets, emails, and Facebook comments in just a minute. First, though, let's talk about the politics of this. Governor Ron DeSantis is refusing growing pressure to lock down the state of Florida, despite the warnings from health experts, like we just heard from Dr. Rathore. The governor's position is contrary to a mounting number of public health experts who say Florida needs to issue a short-term stay-home order to prevent the spread of coronavirus before the number of seriously ill Floridians overwhelms the healthcare system. Governor DeSantis has called on New Yorkers fleeing the virus to Florida to self-quarantine here. Mike Binder runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab, and he's on the line. Hi, Mike. Good morning.
What happened?
All right. Okay. Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. Okay, so Governor DeSantis is resisting pressure to lock down the state, even though major cities around Florida and mayors are taking matters into their own hands and calling for local lockdowns. Here in Jacksonville, Mayor Curry hasn't gone so far as to do that, but he has issued an executive order telling everyone who can to work from home. Is the governor making a mistake here?
Well, I think the governor is in a really tough position, as are all of our elected officials. Most of these folks are not professionally trained epidemiologists, or they don't have experience with infectious diseases, and they're relying on other people. The other problem is they have competing interests, and I'm not just talking about the economy, which is a big one, but a state like Florida, for example, has so many different circumstances. You have your Miamis and your Tampas, Orlandos, and Jacksonville's, which are much more urban centers. where, as we see across the country and across the world, are struggling more than the more rural areas are, just because of the fact we have so many people right on top of each other. Trying to balance that is a difficult act, and trying to figure out at what point do you cut off essentially, you know, not only just the economy, but life as we know it is a really difficult balance to strike.
What do you make then of the model that shows that nearly 500,000 people will be hospitalized by the end of April with COVID-19, but there will only be 36,000 and change hospital beds available by that date? To flatten that curve, the epidemiologists say we need 3 solid months of social distancing, and that it would flatten even more with 3 months of shelter in place.
Yeah, I mean, I am not one to argue with the science of this, and I think that's probably very true. The thing that's getting conflated here, and listen, there are 2 different parts to this problem that we're talking about, and oftentimes they get intermingled with each other. The first one is the strain on the healthcare system. So the fact that you get a whole bunch of people sick all at once, there's not enough hospital beds, there's not enough ventilators, and then what you have is people that potentially could be saved under normal circumstances end up dying. Or people with other ailments that occur, heart attacks, car accidents, the things that happen on a daily basis, those folks might not get the care they need because the healthcare system is currently overwhelmed. There's that aspect of it, and that's the important part of flattening the curve. The other part of this is individual people who get sick and potentially die. And listen, this is not a circumstance where, oh, I'm young, I'm not going to die, I'm fine. Listen, we are all going to face this, and there's a really good chance at some point in time we're all going to have been exposed to this, whether it's today, 3 months, or 6 months from now. And the trick is to not have this all happen in at one short window. Because if this all happens in the course of a week or two, then that's when you really have problems. And that's what you face things like Italy and Spain are facing right now.
Yeah. Let's go back to Dr. Mobeen Rathore, our infectious disease specialist with Baptist Health. He's also on the line. Dr. Rathore, what is your reaction to the governor's actions? He says he will restrict visitors coming into the state from hotspots, including New York. He's asked New Yorkers to self-quarantine when they come here. There's no way to enforce that, though. Nearly 20 governors around the country have issued some form of a stay-at-home order. What do you make of the Florida response so far?
Well, I think the data are clear. The infection is already in the state. And certainly those efforts to curtail further import of coronavirus into Florida is going to be helpful. But listen, the infection is here, right? It's spreading. And, you know, this is going to get to an exponential spread very soon. And I think it would be naive for us to think that if we don't take those strong actions, shelter at home and other social isolation distancing measures, that we will be able to escape this. We will not. And I think this is, you know, if we say, well, there are, and clearly there are economic concerns, there are lots of other concerns, but infection is going to get here, the pandemic is going to get here, and we may pay a bigger price down the road. Look, see what's happening in New York. I mean, they did a lot of things, but still, I think it's a challenge there. And I think if we do not take these actions and do not take them soon, I'm afraid that Florida will pay much higher price in the long run. We are a state that depends on visitors. And if we cannot curtail this epidemic in Florida, you can well imagine what it will do. So I think it is... We need to be wise about this. We need to say, yes, this is a hard pill to swallow. It's going to impact us. It's going to impact people's livelihoods. I'm not taking that lightly. But I think in the choice between your life and your livelihood, I think most people will go for their life.
We have so many tweets. If you're just tuning in, it's First Coast Connect. Broadcasting remotely this morning as I work from home. Our guests right now, Dr. Mobeen Rathore, infectious disease specialist with Baptist Health, and Mike Binder. He runs UNS Public Opinion Research Lab. Due to the limits of our technological setup, we can't take your phone calls, so let's go to some tweets and emails and Facebook comments, just a few for you. Kelly says, the governor is wasting enormous amounts of time, and people who are going to pay for it are the people of Florida. She says that's a quote from Harvard's Global Health Institute. Myra tweets, this is a disgrace. The longer we wait, the worse it will get. Karen on Twitter, this is a total lack of leadership and vision by the governor. His inaction will trigger significant and short and long-term consequences for Florida and the economy. On the other hand, here is a tweet from Susan. I think it makes sense to let each city decide on shelter in place on its own. And then we have a lot of feedback coming in on Facebook as well. Perry is on our Facebook page and says we need to cut to the chase and have a global shutdown. Everybody stay indoors for 14 days and then be done with it. Okay, Mike Binder, obviously Ron DeSantis doesn't want to see Florida's economy grind to a halt. But what about the argument that others have made that if the hospitals are overwhelmed, and many seniors in particular are dying in this state, and people are still too scared to go into businesses because we don't flatten the curve in a timely manner, that the economy is going to be at a standstill anyway?
The economy is already at a standstill. Things are happening, but not nearly enough. And this is going to come out in the next couple months when the unemployment numbers come out and when we see GDP growth or lack thereof. The economy has already just been battered and will continue to be so for the not so distant future. This is going to go on for a while. This is not going to be ending by Easter, no matter what somebody at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue says. This is a long-term problem that's going to continue. Now, thinking about some of the politics of this and how that impacts it, right? Governor DeSantis is in a really hard spot, being a Republican, being a supporter of Trump, but also thinking about what's coming out of the White House and how Trump is saying, listen, either you're with me or you're against me. And you have to wonder if some of the lack of support for New York City might be because the Cuomo, the governor of New York, is such an ardent opponent of Donald Trump. Maybe DeSantis is playing the smart game, cozying up, saying the right things in the hopes of getting more federal assistance. There's a lot of things at play here in a better world that wouldn't be the problem and everybody would be on the same page. But when you have so many different divergent ideas and philosophies and perspectives, it gets hard to get to that point.
There have been published reports that Florida has received word from the federal government that it will get all of the requests it's made for PPE, personal protective equipment. But Dr. Rathore, those may not be here right away. And let me ask you, Doctor, epidemiologists have warned that there could be, as Mike said, multiple waves of this pandemic, that we could have to do a few rounds of staying at home or sheltering in place, whatever we end up calling it. Is that your understanding as well as an infectious disease specialist?
Now, that is going to be determined in large part what we do today, what we do right now. If we are not going to control this in a manner which is above politics, we are going to be hurting. I think you said that there's promise to get all those supplies. Well, we can't even get those supplies to the places that are hit hard right now. Where are those supplies going to come from? Let me point out one more thing. When we don't do shelter at home, we are also placing many of my colleagues, healthcare workers, physicians at risk. So if you think about it, if the healthcare providers, healthcare workers also get impacted in a similar manner, and remember, don't forget that we are at the highest risk because we are taking care of sick patients who we don't know often if they have COVID-19 or not. And if that happens, so you'll now have really sort of a perfect storm with increased number of people who are going to be sick, requiring attention in the hospitals, and then you'll have healthcare workers who cannot come to work because they are sick themselves. I think we are not.
Is that happening at Baptist Health? Do you have any healthcare
That has not happened at Baptist Health, and to the best of my knowledge, has not happened at other healthcare institutions in Jacksonville. But I know from my colleagues, I heard from my colleagues in New Jersey and New York, it's happening there. Doctors and nurses and other healthcare workers are getting sick. So every time you take a healthcare worker out of the equation to help people, it puts more stress on the healthcare system. So I think, thank God I'm not a politician, but I can tell you, science, epidemiology, medicine is screaming at us and saying, we need to do this. We need to do this now. And if we don't, we're going to hurt our fellow citizens. So I understand all the complexities that go into making those decisions, but we need to keep our eye on the results. We need to keep on the end result of what could happen. If it could affect our economy even worse, if people are so sick, and this, if the healthcare system gets overwhelmed, there's going to be, it's going to affect the others. There's going to be a sort of effect on others and people around us. So I think we need to be very concerned and careful that we need to work on the current wave. Yes, there could be a secondary and tertiary waves of this. But if you're not even addressing the primary wave, then what are we doing?
That's Mobeen Rathore, doctor, specialist in infectious disease, on the line with us from Baptist Health. Mike Binder, who runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab, is with us. I'm broadcasting from home today, as almost everyone at WJCT is now working remotely, as we take heed to Mayor Curry's executive order to work from home if you can. So we cannot take your phone calls today, since we have such a different setup, but we are going to go to a few emails now. Here's one from Mark. He is in ground electronics at Mayport Naval Station and says, my daughter is a server in Gainesville, and my son works in Tampa. The mayors of both cities made the decision to lock down citizens last night at midnight. My daughter has been laid off and has to be out of her current residence at the end of the month. My son went to help her move. These things must be done. They are being responsible and have made it clear they will maintain separation from others. There must be some middle ground for situations like this. Who would have thought, but we must keep the fire trucks, ambulances, city vehicles, and the vehicles of doctors and nurses running. Best of luck to everyone. Karen emails the show, how should we take care of ourselves at home if we believe we have the virus? You know, Dr. Rathore, there was a long line outside TIA Bank Field yesterday, much longer than the day before, of people lining up in their cars to get tested to see if they had the virus. What's your advice for people out there who are trying to take care of themselves at home if they think they have it?
I think if people believe that they have infection, it could be COVID, the first thing they should do is call their physician. They should not go to the emergency room. They should definitely not go to the doctor's office, because if they truly do have that infection, it could be a problem. And then your physician can advise you best whether you need to get tested, whether we can evaluate each patient individually in that fashion, and then you can advise them what they have to do. I think it would be, you're placing yourself and others. So if you go to an emergency department or you go to the doctor's office and some thinking that you may have COVID and you don't, and somebody else has there, you're placing yourself at risk. But if you do have COVID and you show up at the doctor's office or emergency department, you may expose others. So I think what I've seen on social media, stay at home so we can go to work, meaning healthcare providers. So I think you call your doctor, seek their advice, whether it is, and of course, if you're sick enough that you need to go to the hospital, by all means, you need to go to the hospital, because, you may not have COVID, you may have something else also. That don't forget, the other diseases are not going, the heart attacks and the COPDs.
Yeah,
and the,
we're getting asthma. Emails, we're getting questions about that too. Someone emailed us and said, I'm going to be delivering my baby soon. What kind of care can I expect at the hospital?
I think you're going to get the best care you can get still. We will still, we are ready to take care of that for your baby and for a pregnant woman. I think that is still, right now, you're in a good place with that. Now, if you have COVID-19 infection, then you will have some other precautions, other things, or you're suspected that will have to happen. And we are working on that. You know, we have policies and procedures in place. What happens in, whether you are if you are infected with COVID-19 or you're not, how we take care of things. So those processes at this point, as we speak today, Melissa, I think our labor and delivery rooms are working quite efficiently and effectively in the city.
Here's an email from Ed. What's the difference between total lockdown and what we currently have? Is it closing takeout for restaurants, closing gas stations and supermarkets? What else is open? Mike Binder, in Wuhan, China, in Europe, other places that have gone through this, when they've locked down entire areas or entire countries, Italy is the example that comes to mind, they did it first in piecemeal stages, but then eventually they did close everything except grocery stores, pharmacies, and gas stations, is my understanding, right?
And, of course, medical facilities, of course.
And hospitals, yeah. So that would be that. Yeah. That is what the governor is reluctant to do, we should point out. He's sort of trying to walk a middle path right now.
Right, and that's very difficult to do. It's also difficult to do. Listen, we have a federal system. So we have a federal government, we have a series of state governments, and below those, local entities with a variety of levels of control. So let's just say, for example, Florida decides to shut down. Well, guess what? You know, we border with other states, and unless you want to deploy the police at the border to stop all cars coming into the state, then, I mean, and that's not realistic. It's a very difficult situation, and we are not all on board. The other problem, and I think this is really important, the data that we have is extraordinarily incomplete at best. The people that have tested positive are a limited selection of cases. Many more people have it than have been tested. Many more people have it and are still waiting test results. A good friend of mine up in New York State was tested on March 15th. She is still yet to get her results. It's now 10 days later. Folks need to be understanding that the numbers that we're seeing about infection, whether it's, you know, a couple hundred here, a couple thousand in the state, those are woefully underrepresentative of the amount of people that are actually infected.
Dr. Rathore, I think that's why people are so on edge, because they are aware that many more people likely have been infected than we know of, and the incubation period can be as long as 14 days. Now, to be clear, the majority of people who come down with this are going to have mild to moderate symptoms. But what do you make of the fact that the United States was so slow to ramp up and start testing so that we could measure this more accurately?
I think the hopefully now in the next few weeks, we will see a ramping up of the availability of tests. There's a rapid test available, commercial tests are available. But yes, you're right, we are woefully behind in the amount of testing that is necessary and what is available. To take on the point, I think it's, you know, we don't have any epidemiological data, but people are guessing that for every positive case that you know, there are probably 100, 200 other who you don't know about. That's just a guesstimate, an extrapolation. You know, we have been through many epidemics, SARS and H1N1 and Ebola and bird flu. This is nothing like we have seen in our recent memory. 1919 Spanish flu, you know, that was, and we know from that. We have data from that, and that's why we are harping on this fact that flattening the curve is so important. St. Louis had a different situation compared to Philadelphia, which had a spiking of infection. We know right here in Northeast Florida, remember the yellow fever, historically the yellow fever outbreak that we used to have. What did we do? We stayed at home. Polio, if you read the history of polio, during this time that polio would become, parents would keep their kids at home. You know, we did all sorts of things to protect our community. And I struggle that what we have not learned from our history, and we are going to make the same mistake, and we will be into this for in a very terrible situation, and maybe for a long period of time. So yes. That's the point I was making earlier, Melissa. The infection is here. We just have to make sure that we are able to curtail it from spreading to other people.
Here is a tweet for you from Heddle. Listen to Dr. Rathore, and let's make a small sacrifice now that will save us all in the long run. Listen to the doctors and scientists, she says. Tracy tweets the show, how many people actually have a primary care doctor they can call and have health insurance? Mike Binder, in the wake of this crisis, we should note that Congress last night finally, after years of, or excuse me, days of arguing, they do argue all the time, but they, on this particular point, they were arguing again. They passed a $2 trillion rescue package to try to help people economically. There are still millions of Americans without health insurance who don't have a primary care doctor. There are going to be lots of Floridians already filing for unemployment in record numbers here. And so, it's really been remarkable to see how this has played out with the idea now of people getting direct checks from the government. You wouldn't have seen Republicans advocating for that in the past, necessarily. So this crisis is upending our traditional ideas of where people might stand on how we apportion taxpayer money.
Yeah, and it's also one thing they have in the back of your head here. $2 trillion is an extraordinary amount of money. And, you're talking about upping our national debt by 10%. You're also thinking about, people are going to get direct checks and that's going to help. That's great. $1,200 maybe for somebody making under $75,000 one time. What that doesn't get you all that much, maybe it buys you a month in rent and some groceries, but this is not a month-long problem. This is going to extend much longer than that, and the reverberations throughout the economy and the layoffs, like the email that you got earlier, it's not just going to be servers that are in college that can go home and live with mom and dad. This is going to affect literally top to bottom everywhere. And, it's nice that Congress finally came together, but this is going to be a much bigger problem than is going to be fixed with one aid package.
I thank you both gentlemen for being on the show today. Dr. Mobeen Rathore, infectious disease specialist with Baptist Health, and Mike Binder, who runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa, and keep up the good work and stay safe.
You too, Doctor. Up next, small businesses are staring at the possibility of bankruptcy in the face of this crisis. Some timely advice on that coming up. We'll be right back.
Sporer Dodd, a Florida-based law firm with a reputation for skilled, aggressive advocacy against corporations, individuals, and government agencies. Sporer Dodd has recovered over $1 billion on behalf of clients. Learn more today at sdlitigation.com.
A1A Solar designs and installs residential and commercial solar electric systems. NABCET certified A1A Solar provides sustainable and financially efficient energy solutions. Learn whether solar is right for you with a 5-question quiz at a1asolar.com.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, as we are dealing with a public health emergency right now, it's no surprise to any of us that we're also dealing with a financial crisis. Business owners are desperately seeking relief from state and federal sources, and they're wondering if they'll have to declare bankruptcy. We've got some advice right now on that. Nina LaFleur is a bankruptcy attorney in St. Augustine, and she's on the line. Hi, Nina.
Good morning, Melissa.
Okay, so if you're a small business owner right now and you don't have any customers, you're obviously terrified. What's your first order of advice for a business owner right now?
Well, I just want to remind them that there's no rush to file. Bankruptcy is going to be here. It's a safety net. We don't know yet how much pain and financial suffering people will incur, or how much debt businesses may have to incur before an actual filing. So just don't rush to anything. when we saw a panic of filings in October of 2005, when they changed the laws, everyone was told that filing would be difficult. Credit card debt and medical debt would no longer be dischargeable, that debtors had to repay all their debts, and horrible things would happen. That was not the case 15 years ago, and that's not the case now. Bankruptcy is available, and it will be available for you in the future, so let's just not rush. That's probably my primary message.
Okay, so so no sudden moves. That's usually good advice in any crisis when you're thinking about your money. What are some mistakes that people have made in the past in these situations that you think they should not do?
I would stress and highly recommend that you not take equity out of your house and don't raid your IRA or 401k. Those are protected assets, and so let's not use those funds. Of course, I would never tell anyone to run up their credit cards at a time like this. In fact, I'm prohibited by law from saying that. But if you're not receiving a paycheck and you do have available credit, we're all doing what we have to do now. I would also encourage people to file for unemployment if that is available. I would discourage some of the loans, the SBA loans, as the government usually takes a second lien on your home and a lien on your firstborn. So look for other sources of funding. Don't worry about your credit score at this time. That's not the time to worry about it. And finally, I would note that I was just going to note that although the Treasury Secretary has extended the tax day from April 15th to July 15th, if you anticipate a refund, it is highly recommended that you file for that as soon as possible before the system gets inundated.
That's great advice. Can you take us through the pros and cons of declaring bankruptcy, Nina? It can help a lot in certain situations, but it does come with strengths.
Certainly. I've been doing this for 30 years, and that's a common question. The pros are that we can completely eliminate most unsecured debt, medical debt, credit card debt, deficiencies from vehicle repossession and mortgage foreclosures. So that it is a much simpler process than people are told or believe. The good thing about Florida is that the exemptions we have here, which are the laws that let you protect certain assets, are very beneficial to Floridians. So that is one of the pros. Cons, people always ask about their credit. When will they be able to reestablish credit? And it's right away. It starts right away. We've found that, after a case is filed, generally credit card companies will send them unsolicited credit cards because they'll say, hey, you're debt-free, have a credit card. So you'll be able to get that established right away. Then, of course, there's the social stigma. People don't want to do this. The filings are not reported in a newspaper of general circulation, like the Times Union. So no one's going to know unless you tell them. It's stressful, but I've found that 99% of the time, after the case is filed and we go and the discharge is entered, the folks let out a big sigh of relief and say, I should have done this earlier. So we see great benefits for it, and it provides a good amount of relief. And we think some relief will be needed for businesses, particularly restaurants, as you and their workers, as you discussed on your show yesterday. We have a great group of experienced and skilled bankruptcy attorneys in Jacksonville and the surrounding area. So I would just suggest call them with your questions. If you have any questions, call any of them. Find the attorney that's right for you and know that bankruptcy as a safety net will always be there.
That is comforting. It's still such a scary time, though, Nina, for so many folks. you tend to think of someone who owns a business filing for bankruptcy, but there are plenty of personal bankruptcies as well. People just are unable to pay their bills for whatever reason because they get hit with a series of setbacks. And that now is going to be the case for millions of Americans. And so will the bankruptcy is a safety net, as you pointed out, that people could pull that trigger if it comes to it. But what if millions and millions of Americans file Chapter 11 at once?
It's a possibility, and it's actually very interesting timing because in February, a new law was implemented through the Bankruptcy Code to provide relief for small businesses. So it's a simpler process, it's cheaper, it's quicker, and I think that was just incredible timing that we now have this additional tool to use for businesses. The problem with most businesses and business debt is that it's generally personally guaranteed by the owner. So often a business filing will accompany a personal filing.
And you're not worried at all about the system being clogged with just too many filings, that that could be yet another strain on our financial system?
No, I'm not concerned about that. We have a phenomenal and very efficient bankruptcy court system. The Middle District of Florida, which includes Jacksonville, Orlando, and Tampa, is the third busiest district in the country, even now during slower times. So we have processes in place that will be able to accommodate an influx of filings. We also have a lot of very professional and experienced attorneys here in the area that will be on hand to assist people when needed.
Okay, and if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with bankruptcy attorney Nina LaFleur. She's calling in from St. Augustine. She says, don't rush to file for bankruptcy if you're panicked about your business or your finances. And for heaven's sake, don't take equity out of your homes or raid your IRAs. Any other tips for folks, Nina, that are worried right now? Any other advice?
Call me, call any bankruptcy attorney, call and get your questions answered so you can breathe a little bit and just know that we're all here for you and we'll get through this.
That's the thing everyone wants to hear, isn't it? That we're going to get through this.
Exactly.
I think right now, more than anything, people need that reassurance. And when it comes to their health and their finances, you must be getting quite a few calls right now, Nina, I would guess.
Not quite yet. Everyone's kind of waiting, which is good. But we do get calls with just questions, you know, random calls with questions about the process and how it works and what's needed. There's documents that are required. We prepare a petition. It's filed with the court. A court appoints a trustee. There's seven different trustees in Jacksonville, and they're all very experienced and very, very good at their job. Generally, there's a court hearing scheduled in Jacksonville that takes about 10 minutes. That process right now is in flux, and we're waiting to hear what the new procedure will be. But essentially after that, all the debts are wiped out. So it's something we can definitely walk you through and get a fresh start.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Nina LaFleur, she's a bankruptcy attorney in St. Augustine. Thanks, Nina.
Thank you. The pleasure was mine.
And up next, finding a little piece of calm in the storm we're now in through simple meditation. That's after this. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
Hanania Subaru of Orange Park would like to present our new dealership, 13 acres of new Subarus and a 34,000 square foot showroom with customer amenities. We're now at 6400 Blanding Boulevard or online at SubaruOfOrangePark.com.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan.
In serious accidents, first responders can now reach the families of over 17 million Floridians. Have you registered your emergency contact information?
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
North Florida TPO, proud sponsor of WJCT's First Coast Connect, bringing to the community innovation in transportation planning, commuter services, clean fuels, and intelligent transportation systems. More at northfloridatpo.com.
As Americans are urged to practice social distancing, some are finding it impossible. Consider the grocery store cashier.
I haven't been able to do social distancing. Like, somebody will come up and they try to pay with their card, and then you know how it doesn't work, yeah. And then they don't know what to press.
Working the register amid a global pandemic, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
My horse could do that in an afternoon. Wouldn't even break a sweat.
On the next Radio Lab.
I bet I can outrun your horse.
Man against horse. Winner take all.
Sunday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
This current crisis did not come out of nowhere. Ask Bill Gates. In 2015, just after the world narrowly avoided a global Ebola outbreak, Gates was sounding the alarm.
We're not ready for the next epidemic.
Now there's talk of quickly getting people back to work. If Washington wasn't listening then, is it listening now? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, back in 2004, Dan Nevins of Ponte Vedra lost part of one of his legs to an IED while he was serving in Iraq. He later lost part of the other one and received prosthetic limbs. During a particularly rough stretch of his recovery, he took up meditation and yoga at the suggestion of a friend. Since then, Dan Nevins has become an internationally renowned speaker, yoga instructor, and leader, and he lectures on meditation and mindfulness too. Dan says in this stressful time, a simple morning meditation with your cup of coffee or tea can make all the difference. He explained how.
Just listening to the sound of your voice calms me down, which is what we need right now. And people are anxious, they're worried. They have incredible anxiety, and I can't think of a better person than you to sort of soothe everyone's frazzled nerves. Of course, you're internationally known for teaching yoga, but you're also a fan of meditation, and that's another way we can boost our immune system and calm down too, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's actually my meditation practice is what led me into yoga. So I'm more of a consistent meditator than I am yoga, but my yoga practice is also very consistent. For me, meditation is the sort of the goal. And so in times like these, where there's fear, there's very evident fear and panic and worry and distress, I fall right into my meditation practice. And it just reminds me that I have everything I need to get through it.
So how can people who are new to this begin a meditation practice?
The reality is, all meditation is sitting still and being completely present. So feeling the things that you feel, hearing the things that you hear, experiencing the sensations in your body that are actually happening right now in the experience of meditation is meditation. One of the ways that I like to help people understand about what meditation is by using like their morning coffee or tea or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can be completely present in the moment of experiencing and enjoying that cup of coffee or tea or whatever it is for them.
Just take 10 minutes while you're having your morning coffee to focus on nothing but that, right?
Absolutely. Feel the temperature. Notice the temperature of the coffee or the tea or the beverage. To be aware of the scent and the smell. To feel the vessel, the thermos, the cup, the mug, whatever it is in their hand, like the firmness of it, the temperature of it, all of these things that are actually happening right now. And in that experience of just being present to enjoying your morning coffee or your morning tea, that is meditation. When we start there, it creates that aha moment, like, okay, I get it. And so that makes access to sort of deeper versions of meditation where you're not using a prop, where you're just sitting still and being with what's happening in your body, it makes that next step easier and more understandable for people.
Right. Meditation in a coffee cup. That is a brilliant gateway into this that anyone can do.
Absolutely.
So once people 100%. begin, what other advice do you have for them to try to maintain their calm and reduce their anxiety as we head into what's definitely going to be a challenging time for a lot of Americans?
Well, I'd say one of the best things to do is to remember to be grateful. To be grateful for the things that are going well. What happens, the process of stress and anxiety is the complete lack of being present, which is why meditation is so powerful for that. And so what I'd say is just remind people when they're aware that they are in a state of fear or panic or anxiety, to press their feet into the floor. In the moment when you notice when things are going awry, especially in your own mind, to create the sensation in your body, press your feet into the floor and realize where you are right now. Press your feet into the earth. Bring your attention to where you actually are. You're safe. You're inside your home. You're inside your car. You're at your place of work, hopefully socially distanced from people. And take a deep, full breath in. Pull your shoulders back. Sit up straight. And so that simple moment of actually getting out of your head in some fictional future that you've created where you're in danger and you're in harm, you're putting yourself back in the real present moment that is safe, whole, and complete. And in that moment, when you get present, is you can just look and do an inventory of your life, your thoughts, what's right in front of you. What's one thing I'm grateful for? Because it's impossible to be in gratitude for something and in anxiety or fear about something at the same time.
Excellent advice. Dan Nevins, thank you for that. That's going to help a lot of people. So we really appreciate it. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, I'm so happy. Thank you so much, Melissa.
And we're going to be hearing from Dan throughout this crisis. So we appreciate that too. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. She is in the Ponte Vedra Bureau of WJCT right now, and I'm in the Springfield one. But we're all keeping the show on the air any way we can. Michelle Corum is our director, but Josh Torres directed today, actually. Jessica Palumbo is our station news director, and Bill Bortsfield runs digital for us. Keep your emails coming. We really appreciate all your feedback. It's firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Melissa Ross, and we'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow, remotely. We'll connect with you again then. Stay safe, flatten the curve, and we will all get through this together.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.